Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. So welcome to Friday's Q&A podcast. We are absolutely thrilled that you are listening again this week. And I think this one, well, I know this one is going to be absolutely wonderful because never have we needed a parenting SOS Q&A podcast more. Basically, we're all in the shit together. We're welcoming back to the podcast Chris and Rose from Expect the Best.
Yay! Hi, thank you so much for, you know,
having us back.
Yeah, I was about to sing ABBA then. When you're in, no, but I don't know the words. I'm SOS to you. But we're so pleased to be here. So yeah, I think we jump straight in. Fire those questions at us.
Absolutely. I think we've never needed this more, have we, Zoe? Both of us are phoning each other constantly. Like, I thought September was supposed to be the time when we got our, you know, our time back for ourselves and everything was supposed to fall into place. But actually, it's turned into a bit of a shit show. So here we are.
Yeah, it's been a tricky time, I think, for both of us, because stuff has come up around Gigi. Stuff has come up for Kit again with changing preschools and a regression in the potty training. Gigi went potty training at all. Kit's now just eating sausages and Weetabix, and that's basically it. So I mean, there's definitely stuff going on in our worlds that makes us think, I thought we had this covered, but now we don't at all. So thank you for coming back and shedding all the light on it. let's get straight in. George, you want to take the first question?
Yeah, I'll kick us off. This has just made me laugh, but I really shouldn't laugh because it's not funny. Because when it happens, you actually really worry. It just says 17-month-old banging on sofa, game, frustration. When I don't know, Zoe, about you, but Gigi does it when she's so frustrated, she just bangs her head against something like, ah! And you worry for them because you think, are you going to hurt yourself? But what is actually going on?
I mean, we all know that thing, you know, when a child throws themselves back, it's the same when they do that thing where they make themselves a dead weight. Also quite fun to do as an adult to your husband, just FYI, when you make your body go really heavy. It's a frustration thing, especially at this age, at 17 months, you know, we're kind of eking into that period where we're going to be getting into the testing twos, which we've done an episode with you before on. And it's just that point where their emotions they're trying to get a hold of just kind of build up, and the only way for them to come out sometimes is them kind of just throwing themselves out. It's showing you that they're feeling frustrated and annoyed because they don't know how to communicate that yet. So everything comes out in quite a big action, and sometimes it feels like a bit of an overreaction when they throw themselves back like that. I mean, the only thing to do with that sort of thing is make sure that they're in a safe space, and sometimes you need to just let a child kind of thrash it out a bit.
I was going to say that, just because for some children it is actually way more common than I think anyone thinks, and a lot of children do it you know, at nap time or at bedtime as a way to like self-soothe and calm down. And it's, I think, you know, that the only precautions that we can take are that it's giving them as much of a soft surface as we possibly can. I think the things to remember with it are that actually if it's like a self-soothing thing, then actually sometimes it's you know, it is actually okay to just let them, provided, you know, you're not really worried, just as Chris said. So yeah, I think sometimes, you know, not drawing too much attention to it, not going, oh, what's happening, are you okay, are you okay, are you okay, just actually just letting them have that little moment, and then trying to distract them out of it, if it, particularly if it's, you know, becoming that you're really worried about them. I would say distraction is your best tool here.
Distraction is so key, actually, Rose. And we do this thing called talking to the room, don't we, Rose? Where we're like, oh, I don't know why I'm saying this. Look at my feather boa over there. I don't have feather boas laying around a lot, guys, just so you know.
Yes, you do. You're fooling no one.
I do. But you know what I mean? Talking to the room and making something else, even like being quite mundane and small, interesting. So, for example, that Gigi's like, oh, well, what mummy's doing is a bit more interesting, so I'm just going to wander over and do that.
Yeah,
and kind of ignoring that behaviour when, especially when they're not doing it to be naughty or anything or be badly behaved. They're just feeling a bit frustrated, so just distracting them out of it.
Love that. Okay, here's one for you, Chris. How to get rid of the dummy of my little one? She has it at night but still loses it. She's 2.5 years old.
Oh, the dummy comes up quite a lot. We've just literally dealt with some things like this. I would say, you know, you can do it one or two ways. Dummy fairy is a great one. So kind of talking about the fact that the dummy fairy is going to come and replace it with something. So collecting up all the dummies, leaving them outside their bedroom, and in the morning there might be like a book or like a small present there for them or a note to say that they've gone off to help another child. If you've got another child or baby in the family, you could post them, probably not very COVID friendly, but, you know, post them in to a new baby is quite a nice thing. And then they receive a note back and like a nice book or something from someone. The best way to go with the dummy, if you definitely want to get rid of it, and you have to think about why you're getting rid of the dummy, is it for them and it's time, or are you doing it for yourself? And also you need to make sure that you're ready and confident to be going with it. So if it is in the night, that you're doing a consistent approach to how you react to them waking up, but just going completely cold turkey with it. Don't leave one or two around. If you're going to go with it, you've got to believe that it's going to work and just go with it. But you can use it like a bit of storytelling to make it a bit more interesting and fun.
I am listening to this because this is totally what I need to do with Gigi. Like, I really, you know, it's like, is it a problem? I don't know if it's a problem. It's fine. She only has it at night, but she just loves them so much. Like, she's like on the way home from nursery, like, where's my dummy? Where's my dummy? Can I see my dummy when I get home? And she comes up to her bedroom just to look at it. It's really odd. And I do you know what? I'm just going to book, like, in my head, just book a couple of days out where I'm not going to make any plans and I'm just going to suffer it and go with it.
Yeah, but you know that Luna had that with Alfie. And then the only thing that stopped Luna sucking Alfie was that his bloody ear fell off. And then it was like, oh, well, you can't suck it anymore. And now he's got one ear. And she comes in every morning. She goes, Alfie's a bit deaf. You'll have to speak up because he's only got one, ear.
I think as well, though, don't put too much pressure on yourself as well. Like, she might be obsessed with it, but think about how much comfort she's probably got from that.
Yeah, and that's true. I just worry.
Why she has that attachment. If she only has it at night, I would say restricting first is the best bet. So make sure it's only night times, doesn't come out of the bedroom. That's okay. Honestly, I know this sounds like a really annoying thing to say. You won't see a 21-year-old with a dummy. Well, you might do, but you won't. Like, she's not going to have it at university. Do you know what I mean? So don't worry too much about it.
Is there anything else she's attached to?
She has got two comforters that she's attached to. You know what I worry about? Like, literally, that she won't, like, I'll get rid of it successfully, but then she'll see one in a shop and then shoplift and steal it and put it in a pocket or something.
Okay, you were worrying about things that will not happen.
In my head, I honestly
think... Gigi, the kleptomaniac.
Yeah, I have to keep her away from all of them forever. Anyway, yeah, needs to be done at some point.
Right, next one, George.
Tips for keeping toddler happy after arrival of newborn sibling.
If baby hasn't arrived yet, then preparation is great for this. I think that sometimes we're tempted to make a big deal out of a new sibling arriving. Lots of pressure can be put on them to be excited about it, and some children just aren't, and that's okay. And sometimes it takes for baby to arrive for them to really understand. I think first things I would say is that when you bring baby home, or if you have had a baby at home, sometimes it can be nice to give a little present from the baby to your child that's already there, as a way to welcome them into the family, talking to them about what their role is within the family, maybe staying away from, you know, talking about how they're a big brother or a big sister now and they've got lots of responsibility, just kind of respecting that they're still very, very much attached and they're very much dependent on you. And so we want to be careful about giving too much responsibility to them.
Yeah.
Through kind of the pressure of expectations. Mm. I think we've all, it can be tempting because we think it's exciting, and it is exciting, but sometimes they're not able to understand that concept yet. So I would say having a little basket filled with some, you know, exciting things that you can get out for when you're wanting to feed, so that they've got something to look at or something to do, can be a really nice idea as well. So you're kind of a bit prepared.
Yeah.
That's really lovely, actually, Rose. And you're right what you said about not putting too much responsibility on the elder child, because I was doing it when we were doing the preschool drop-off, and I was saying to Luna, now, Luna, you will look after Kit today, won't you? Because you're the big girl. And Luna was sort of looking at me like, I just want to have a nice time with my friends. I'm not here to babysit Kit. But, and actually, the preschool teachers went, maybe don't say it all the time. And I didn't even realise I was sort of like giving her a job, but actually it was putting pressure on her, I think.
Yeah.
They were saying she was with him all day trying to look after him. And I was like, oh God, I didn't want that.
Oh, bless, so sweet.
I
mean, some children like the responsibility, so use kind of what that is, getting them involved when, you know, kind of changing and all those things. Some kids like that, but, you know, it's just being mindful not to put the pressure on. And actually, just on top of what Rose said, the other thing is when you've got visitors, the tendency is to go like, oh, look at the new baby. Just respecting the other child was here first.
Yeah.
And being like, because, you know, they don't want to, for some children, it feels like their world is being ripped upside down and everyone that they love and know and everything they've known is being taken away from them. And adding someone into that is quite a lot. I think we sometimes feel like it as well. Do you know when, you know, like your best friend makes a new friend and be like, oh, I met this great person at work. And you're like, excuse me, sorry, what? yeah, exactly. So just kind of being mindful of that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, I used to do that for ages with George when she used to say that she'd made all these new mates at school. And I'd be like, oh, really? She'd be like, it's okay. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, I'm a child. Okay, next one. My nearly two-year-old is hitting out at other children when playing. How to cope with this?
Okay. I mean, again, this could be, you know, an age thing, the testing twos type thing. So often hitting is a way of either getting attention or it's curiosity. So they're like kind of curious to what will happen when they hit, which is kind of another form of attention. So it's just about modeling the behavior that you would like to see, not necessarily swooping in and being like, we don't hit. Of course we don't hit, but explaining that we use kind hands and giving a bit of leeway with them if it happens and being like, oh, remember, you know, our hands are for being kind. We mustn't hit with them because otherwise people get upset and yada, yada, yada. And then kind of moving it up if it is like a persistent thing, you know, kind of going into a situation where, you know, being a bit more sterner with them, getting down to their level, talking to them about it. Mm. But the best thing to do with any form of a child that's kind of lashing out like that is to tell them that you hear them. You hear they're frustrated if it's a situation where it's frustration involved or they're upset. But then remodeling the behavior, you were like being like, look, we use gentle hands because gentle hands are nice. And, you know, sometimes literally getting a hand and stroking their hand and stroking your face, and kind of putting in that groundwork to be like, okay, when we've made a mistake, it's not being like when we've been naughty or hit someone, because we all make mistakes. Yeah. All we need to be like is, I'm sorry. So put it as a mistake. Mistakes are completely fine. We love mistakes.
Yeah,
but they happen. And it's just about recognizing that and getting children to realize that instead of being like, we don't do that, it's naughty. We all do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Everyone makes mistakes.
I actually turned up to Kit's new preschool yesterday and they said, we've had a bit of an incident. And oh God, I thought, oh shit, here we go. And then she said, yeah, Kit punched three boys. I was like, three boys? What? That sounds like a ball. And then, and they were like, and like, it's not, I mean, we're sort of giggling, but I was like, oh God, is everyone okay? Is it?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I took it seriously.
You feel mortified, but then she was, don't you, when something like that happens?
Yeah, but then Kit was like, but the boy hit me first. And I was like, okay, well, like, what do you, I mean, I said, "Oh, Kit, we don't use our fists, and we use kind hands, and we mustn't hit everybody." And I said, "Look, is it dealt with now?" And they said, "We've dealt with it." And I was like, "Okay, when he comes in tomorrow, let's just forget about it." But it is difficult, isn't it, to know what to say in that moment, because he's not the sort of person to get his fists out and, you know.
Yeah, I think that's difficult. Like, and we've all had it in nursery, and it happens at school. And I think a way to like say to your child about that is be like, if that happens to you, somebody hits you, first of all, your first port of action is to be like, "No, thank you, stop." Like, teaching them to be like, "I didn't consent for you to do that." And we can do that as young as any age. And then being like, "Do you know what, Kit? If they do that, it's not your worry. You go and tell your grown up. That is what they're there for. They're there to help you. You go and tell them." And it's, that's a difference between, we don't want our kids to be a grass. Who am I? You don't want your child to be like a tattletale.
Little snitches end with stitches, or little snitches.
All right, stitches. All right, George.
Snitches end up with ditches.
But giving them that like power to go to an adult and be like, they're there to help you instead.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, deep down, obviously, Zoe, in that point, in that situation, if someone's hit your child and he's hit them back, you're like, yeah, too right. Because we're such a generation of that. My dad was the same with me. If somebody hits you, you hit them back twice as hard. It's kind of in us. And actually, we do need to move away from that, because that's
agreed.
What creates it. So actually being like, there are people here to help you when you're feeling like that.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant.
This is one that comes up time and time again, and I don't think we've ever really got to the bottom of it. So let's have a go. This is from Katie. "Early riser, 5:20 on the dot every morning, and tried everything. 2 years old."
Oh my God.
Oh, bless her.
No one wants
go on,
to
Rose.
Answer.
Go on, Rose.
Do you know why I don't want to answer? It's not because... It is so hard. It's not because I don't have answers. It's because it's so A, child dependent. B, it's really difficult when you feel like you've tried everything and nothing works. I think your first port of call is so irritating to say, but assessing whether or not they're overtired or undertired, and that's going to be looking about where your naps are, if they are still having naps, where your naps are in relation to bedtime. And if they are in looking at the overall sleep that they're getting, it might be that your child likes a little bit less sleep than other children. And therefore, the early rising is because they've actually filled up their sleep cup and they're like, actually, I'm fine and I'm ready to go. In which case, you're going to want to have a look at what your reaction is to them when they wake up, and finding a consistent approach that works for you. You know, if you're giving food at that time, then, you know, your digestive system is going to start, they're going to expect that. So they're going to wake up for that. And so I think, you know, what I would say is have an overall look at your whole routine and your whole schedule, and see if you can see any obvious gaping kind of, you know, that actually, do you know what? Sometimes we do let him sleep or her sleep a little bit later. And so therefore, maybe we need to bring it back a bit in earlier in the day. Mm-hmm. Or actually, is he just, or she really just struggling to get to bedtime, and therefore is... that's impacting the early rising. I know it sounds and it feels funny that daytime sleep affects
it does.
Early rising, but it really does.
It's like a formula, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they wake up at, say, like 5 o'clock, what's the best thing to do? Is it like to ignore them, like, you know, or keep going in like you might do at night if you were sleep training, like, it's still the night time, go back to bed, and keep, is that the best thing to do?
It's very child dependent. Again, as Ray said, some children you go in and that's it, like they're literally like, it's the morning sun and they're up. So some children it's kind of like best to leave them, and other children go in and pretend it's like nighttime. If they are a bit older and you're using methods like the grow clock or different things to signal when waking up, just pull it back as much as it might be a bit painful to be like, it's 5 to 6, be like, oh, actually this is the time you're meant to get up, well done, and then you eke it back, if that makes sense. So like setting them up to win And then you can moderate the time when they're happy. Because half the time when they wake up, you know, from that like kind of 2.5 period older, is that they just want to get up and see you or like want to get up and play. But if you're setting them up to win by like changing the timings, that will really help. So kind of judging it on what your child's like to what you do. You know, anything past 6, we kind of see as a win. I know some children sleep in much later, but as Rose says, just kind of assessing everything. And I know it's, as she said at the start, it feels very annoying to be like, we've tried everything. There is so much you can try. And I know when you're in it, you just feel like it's completely gone and nothing's working.
It's all consuming. But, yeah. You know, sometimes it's actually not even what we're doing. Sometimes it is that you've got to also assess the environment that they're in. Is the room very overstimulating? Is there light being let in any way, shape or form? Is there something that happens outside at that particular time that then wakes them up and jolts them away?
Are they hungry? Are they cold?
Yeah. And actually, that, you know, when you've got at that time, it's actually usually coldest at around that time, isn't it? They've lost so much of that sleep pressure, that need to sleep, because they've had enough of their deep sleep that now we're into territory of, you know, waking up and feeling like they've had enough. So yeah. Exactly what Chris said about going in, you know, I would personally say that if you deal with nighttime waking, and you have a consistent approach for that, then I would be using that consistent approach for that time as well, keeping it very calm, keeping your voice very low, and doing the same thing over and over again and trying really hard to, you know, to stick to that. I know it's such an irritating thing to say.
No, it's not. It's really helpful.
You know,
it's really, really helpful. And also, to the person that sent that message in, I'm going to be honest with you, I completely get where you're at, because I have consistently had a between 5 and 5:30 riser in Luna since the day that she was born, and it's been going on for 5 years. And it's only in the last, I would say, month or so that she now understands the grow clock properly. And if she comes in before, I just take away her toys. I haven't documented this on social media, but I just take away all of the precious things, hide them in a cupboard, and then she does not wait for her clock. I just consistently do it. But this is the point that I'm at now, and I know you're probably going, that's the worst thing that you can do, because I'm basically traumatizing her. But she wakes up. I know she's awake, and I say to her, you can turn your light on, you can play with your Barbie house, you can do whatever, but you do not come in until 6:20, until that clock. 6:20, I'm not asking her to stay in her bedroom till 7. She now gets it, but it has been a tap on the shoulder or a poke in the face for the last 5 years, and it can start to drive you mad. So I'm at that point now where I'm like, if you do not do that, a toy will go. I always give the toys back, you know, when she waits, but that's where we're at the moment. And it's,
do you know what though, that's a consequence that she's old enough now to understand the consequence. You're not traumatizing
her. No, I think that's completely
fine. All right,
I was gonna say, I do the same with Axel. He went through a phase like a couple of weeks ago where he kept coming downstairs at like 10 p.m. It was so weird, and I said I'll take away your football cards and you can have them back if you don't come downstairs. And it worked. Literally worked.
And it worked.
That's brilliant. All it took.
Are you still downstairs at 10 o'clock? I'm asleep by like 8:30.
Yeah, I'm in bed myself. I don't have kids and I'm in bed by 10.
No, to be fair, I am usually asleep by 10. But some on the evenings James goes out, I wait for him to come back. And it's always when James is out. He would never do it when James is here.
No,
he just knows I'm the pushover. Anyway, not anymore.
I'd love that. Why won't my 25-month-old poo on the potty at home? She is totally fine at nursery. That's from Shauna.
I would say if they're not pooing at home like that, but they're fine at nursery, it could be linked to maybe a behaviour thing, and wanting to get control over a situation or something at home. So as we know, like with potty training and, you know, eating, you know, when children refuse to eat and stuff, sometimes it could be to do with their taste buds, or their taste buds are changing, but most of the time, more often than not, it can be that they're trying to control a situation. And you can control when children, if they're clever enough, and every child out there is clever and smart enough from the moment they are born, just to warn you parents, just so you know, it could be a control thing. So wanting to get something. I think putting in those things, like we all do, and I mean, I know Georgia and Zoe, we've gone over this with you guys loads and loads, but like kind of incentivizing at home, or kind of whatever interests they've got, to like kind of help and encourage them, asking what they do at nursery that makes it different and stuff, and actually having the conversation with them as young as they are about it as well, and kind of putting some things in place to try and set them up to win. And once you've done all of that and they're still not doing, then I would look at like kind of what their behavior is like all around, and see whether actually it's a behavior thing we need to change, less so a toilet habit, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Potty training is a minefield, isn't it?
Oh, isn't it just?
We've got a whole episode on potty training. So if you do need any advice in that area, go back and have a little listen. It's brilliant.
We'll be right back after this short break.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we? Right, George, next question.
So this is from Gail. Tips for nursery settling with a 13-month COVID baby attached to me like glue. I think we hear this a lot at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh gosh. I mean, not only is that the kind of like one of the prime ages for attachment anyway, isn't it, Rose? Like having COVID as well. There are lots of kind of little things that you can do making them feel comfortable. So if they sleep at nursery, I know this sounds like a bit of a weird thing, but packing the sheet that they slept in that night to go with them to nursery, you know, like their cot sheet and their own grow bag from home, can be a really helpful thing, because then it's kind of a smell and reminders at home that make them feel comfortable. Obviously a comforter, but the key thing is to keep whatever drop-off routine you've got consistent as possible. So it's, I don't know now, I think lots of nurseries are actually doing lots of handovers at doors and not many parents are going in, or they might have eased that up. But just being like, you know, mummy loves you, goodbye kiss, hand them over. If they are really, really upset and distraught the whole, you know, for an hour, that your childcare setting will call you and let you know what's going on. They would never leave it. So I think taking in things from home that are that kind of smell of home and a key to making them feel comfortable, any comforters they've got, and keeping the drop-off routine consistent and reminding it, and as horrible as it is, don't look back. Because that is hard. I mean, I've been on the other side of that, working in nurseries and been at any settings. I work at school now and it happens sometimes, you know, like it is difficult, but that is the one thing that will help them as well, to make them feel more comfortable.
So great. Brilliant advice. This is from Jo, who is a regular Made by Mamas listener, and she always sends in great questions. And actually, I can relate to this one as well. My two-year-old doesn't want most of the meals that I give her, only wants snacks in front of the telly. That's because my cooking's terrible, but Jo's cooking, amazing. We eat together every night, but I'm concerned.
The first thing, I mean, food is a big one, isn't it? Because I think the main panic I think we all have is if they don't eat, then we feel like in some way we failed and that, oh my goodness, you know, something terrible is going to happen to them. Obviously, because if they don't eat. But yeah. I think first what I would do, I would look at the overall food intake. If you're really worried that they've had a very small meal and they're really not eating anything, have a quick look at your whole day, and perhaps write it down so that you can actually understand how much food they really are having. Having a look at the snacks, the amount of snacks that they're having, and how close they are to meal times. The other thing is that quite often, you know, we have obviously want to have water accessible to children at all times, but sometimes it can impact on appetite levels just before a mealtime. So I would be looking for them not to have a huge drink whilst they're having a bit of trouble, you know, with how much they're eating or how much they're perhaps refusing to eat. By not having big drinks at least an hour before a mealtime, so that the water is not masking how hungry they are, and they're not filling themselves up. Again, that's the same with water at a table during the meal. I mean, I'm reluctant to suggest not having water at the table, but just monitoring how much they're drinking during the meal as well can be helpful. I think lower pressure. It's really small portions.
Yeah, manageable portions. Something that's really not overwhelming, Rose, isn't it?
Yeah, you can always give more. But I think also looking at the types of meals that you're giving, sometimes I've been able to I found that helping fussy eaters by making things a bit more so that you have perhaps a bowl on the table that has, and they're able to spoon some in. Sometimes they like that gratifying, I've put it in my bowl and therefore it becomes more exciting to eat. Sounds silly, but it's, you know, and things like sprinkling their own cheese, say they're having some pasta.
Well, they're in control of it then, aren't they, Rose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in control of it.
Also, we had Manon Lagrève on the podcast. She was amazing, but she's French and she was just like, in France, we just do not have snacks. She was like, in England or in Britain, we're proper snackers. And she was like, in France, we just don't do that. We have three meals. So it's interesting because my kids are proper snackers because I'm a grazer. So I would rather have like small little mouthfuls of food throughout the day than like sit down and have a sunken great big meal. And they're exactly the same. But actually when they do fill up on snacks, they're not interested in a meal either.
Exactly. So you can reduce back snacks and stuff. So, but also I think that's really important to remember what kind of eater your child is.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm not a breakfast person. I never have been. Some people don't eat a lot of breakfast, and you know, my mum said I was like that as a child, and she just relaxed about it because she knew at lunchtime I would wolf down a big lunch and eat a big dinner. Like I think it comes back to, first of all, what Rose started off saying, that you feel like a failure when your child hasn't eaten, because it's our job to provide and make sure they're thing. But there's a difference between being fussy and not eating.
Yeah.
So I think controlling those portions, you know, I think Zoe, you did it for a bit. You had like a vegetable of a week. You had broccoli like every day. You were like, so we had like a veg of the week and you just put a bit on the side. I'm sure like you did that with kale or something.
I do that as well. I do it every day. I mean, I've got to be honest with you and just break this down for you. But and I talked to Georgia about this the whole time. Kit now will not eat any fruit or vegetables. Like we are still there. So the only I have to think every single day, because I'll put down like buttered broccoli and buttered carrots and all the vet, like everything, fruit. She has fruit salads. Luna eats everything. Kit's just, yuck. So I have to hide everything in spaghetti bolognese. But obviously I can't make that every day. So it's just a constant, I wake up in the morning, I'm like, pack lunches, I've got to keep them. And I open up a little part of his packed lunch. And of course there's all the carrots that I've cut up and all the grapes and all the, he doesn't even like grapes. What child doesn't like a grape? They're so sweet. They taste like sweets.
Yeah, they are delicious.
Yeah, that's difficult.
I've given up now. I must have thrown away about, I reckon I could have about 50 grand in the bank with fruit and veg that I've chucked in the bin over the last.
Oh God, well, it's definitely so like annoying, isn't it?
Yeah. Him at school, like on nursery, like making sure they're kind of on board with getting him to go. But do you know what though, that you kind of hit the nail on the head in with like, you're not like you've given up, but sometimes we just have to take a step back from them, not give in to them. I'm not saying give in, but just take a step back. Because once, when we start getting heightened about it and panicking so much, you end up finding yourself being like as you said, wake up in the morning, dreading about what you're going to cook. And that. So, you know, so on those evenings, making things a bit easier for yourself, you know, if they're a bit tired or a bit fussy.
Is he interested in food prep at all or anything? Like, would he like to go to the supermarket and pick something? Or is it just literally actually, I've tried all of that and it's not working?
I mean, he loves it when I open up the oven and put the fish fingers in. He goes, well done, mummy. The food preparation mummy. That went into that. Mwah. No, we do have a good time at the supermarket. And I do say to him, oh, can you go and get the bananas? Okay, and can you see the broccoli? And whoever can see the courgettes first. And he'll just say yuck to all of them, but he will pass them to me.
So no, but you know what? You're still educating him. Yes. And he's still part of that. And there's still the expectation.
Yes.
You know, I would just be putting one carrot stick in.
Yeah.
If he has a little nibble on it, great. If he doesn't,
if he does say yuck, Zoe, if he does say yuck, do you know what you should say to him? Be like, oh, Kit. Well, and I know he's young, but this sounds really crazy. But honestly, be like, okay, Kit, you don't like it, but other people like it. So we're not going to use the word yuck. That's how Kit feels. Mummy loves them.
Yeah.
But he's not constantly being like, oh, it's yuck. Because sometimes he might be saying it for the sake of saying it.
Right,
so actually turning that language around and being like, well, mummy loves bananas. So actually, Kit, can you not say that they're yuck? Okay. If you don't like them, that's fine. You can kind of say that to yourself. But we're going to enjoy them because we enjoy them.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So not reprimanding him. Does that make sense?
Just totally around.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I get all you're saying about yuck because Gigi loves saying yuck. Like, she loves saying that word.
It's like no. Do you know the one the kids would learn no?
It's a fun word to say. But also, Judgy James didn't eat a vegetable till he was about 17.
Oh, and he's a pro footballer, so it's all right.
Exactly, so it was all right. It doesn't matter. This question properly made me laugh. I have to read it. My 3-year-old has started saying fuck off. How do you deal with it?
Oh, God.
Seriously, though, I'm not joking. I had this evening, but instead with shit. I was playing with Lego with him and he dropped something and he was just like, oh, shit, shit, shit.
Oh, shit. And can we all admit children swearing is quite funny? I know it's bad.
It's so
and
funny.
I just went to him, darling, what did you just say? And he went, I just said shit. I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, well, do you know what? I can make a really big deal out of this and I can get cross and I can say that's a horrible word. We never say it. You know, that is bad. But instead, I just said, do you understand? Do you know? Has anyone told you that that's not a very kind thing to say? It's not a very kind word to use. And he was like, oh, no. And I was like, where did you hear it? And he was just like, oh, at school. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, he heard it from me. And then, do you know what he said to me? I said, he said, can I say sugar instead? And
yeah.
I was like, yeah, of course you can. And he was like, that's what you say, isn't it? And I was like, uh-oh.
I think, just either not making a big deal out of it or, as Rose has said, being like, do you know that that's an unkind? Because half the time they don't know it's unkind. So it's assessing the situation. Is it worth bringing it up, what they're saying? Then actually, if it is, being like, do you actually know what it means? Actually, it's quite an unkind word.
Yes.
And actually, if they're a bit older, you know, what I did kind of before I left my nanny job with the girls was they were starting to hear words and stuff. And I said to them, if you ever hear a word and you think, actually, I don't think that's a kind word, do you know what you can do? You come and tell me and I'll tell you whether it's a word we say or not. Because that way you haven't said it and used it in the wrong way. And then I'll tell you whether we can use it or not. And actually giving them the power when they're a bit older to be like, okay, because they're going to say these things. And actually it's you respecting them, hearing that, you know, these things happen and go on. I mean, it's better than, you know, I think my parents have been like, my mum literally would say things like shit and that all the time. And we'd look at her and she'd be like, that's an adult word. And we'd just be like, yes, mum.
I remember when I was driving with Gigi and Axel in the car and he went to me, do you know what I call Gigi? And I was like, no, what do you call Gigi?
Oh,
and he
God.
Went, fucking Gigi. And I went, oh, do you call that? Why do you call Gigi that? And he went, that's what me and daddy call her. And I went, Oh, right. Oh, okay. What? That's not very kind. And now, I swear, like, it's the opposite. Like, the other day he went, someone at school said a really bad word. And I was like, oh my goodness, what did they say? And
he went, yeah.
They called someone an idiot. Idiot. And I was like, and this is like so 6 months later, and it's just completely flipped on its head. So I just don't think the teacher to the assistant teacher.
Yeah, they don't. And also, I think when they start going to school, they start to become much more aware of, like, there's like a behavioural system at Luna School where she gets, you know, she would move from like the sun to like the thundercloud if she did anything naughty. So they're like really aware of it. So it's good. One more. I think we should finish on this one. Kirsty, tips on how to get a toddler to brush their teeth, please.
Oh my gosh. Well, we are going to be doing some stuff on this and expect the best in November. So look out for that. But it is a battle that we hear quite a lot about. And I think, first of all, look at the situation, like, how it's actually quite threatening when there's an adult with a giant hand coming towards your face with a toothbrush to like go in your mouth. So first think of that. So try and give them control. Do it where they feel comfortable. You know, from a young age, start as you can. But if you've kind of got to this point when they're a bit like two and that, let them do it in the bath, kind of whatever.
It's sometimes changing the place.
Yeah, the place is the big thing. Brushing your teeth with them, but just kind of putting yourself in their shoes with this situation, I always think, because I'm like, actually, it looks a bit threatening, like someone trying to come into your mouth with like a toothbrush. Yep. It's a bit scary. So changing the place, making it fun, make up a song, kind of all of those different things can be really good. Or changing when you do it in the day. Do you know what I mean? So like, if you do have like kind of like a downstairs in your house, like keep toothbrushes downstairs.
That's
or they
really
can do it in the kitchen sink.
Yeah, that is
like just changing at what point you do it in the day. To be honest with you, I know obviously we're supposed to do it after food and stuff, and they will get there. But when they're young, if they do it, who cares when they do it, right? Let's just relax about it a bit more.
Yeah.
If they do it, let's get them to do it.
But it's a practice run.
I mean, I don't know
anyway,
if you agree, Rose.
It?
It's a practice.
Yes. It's a practice run.
Do you know what? I had that, and I had that with the youngest that I look after. And sometimes he would brush his teeth for, you know, 5 seconds. And I'd be like, wow, that's amazing. Well done. Off you go. And now he loves brushing his teeth. So honestly, sometimes it's okay to just be like, do you know what? I've brushed them for
a little bit.
We've won. It's gone in the mouth. I'm sure some toothpaste has been swirled about. I mean, I'm not a dentist, but...
It'll do.
That sounds good.
It'll do.
Listen, guys, thank you so, so much for coming back on. It's been absolutely wonderful. We barely scratched the surface with the amount of questions that we had. So we're really sorry if we didn't get to your question today. But we will endeavour to do another one of these, because I feel like these should be a regular occurrence. People need
to. Yeah, we'd love to come on regularly. That would be fun.
We would love that. And if everyone could hound Chris and Rose on their DMs to make sure that they come back maybe monthly, that would be fantastic.
We need a lot of persuading, guys.
Yeah. We don't at all.
Come back soon. Thank you so much, Chris and Rose.
Thank you.
Bye.
Chris and Rose are just ultimately the best human beings ever, aren't they?
I always feel so much better after I speak to them. You know, like all these little worries that you have about brushing teeth and making sure they've brushed their teeth in the morning and the evening, and then they just come on and go, well, it doesn't really matter when they brush their teeth. They could brush their teeth at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as long as they're doing it. And you think, Oh, yeah.
But also, how funny was it when Chris was like, it's pretty scary when a massive hand with a toothbrush comes right in your face and it's like, ugh! And that's what I've been doing to Kit. Open up quickly, put your teeth together. And he's like, oh, and now I've stopped doing it since we recorded that podcast. So, yeah.
Yeah,
thanks, Chris.
Exactly. Oh, my God, don't. They're just the best, aren't they? But we need to talk about products, because we've promised that we would. We'll stick to doing it every Friday.
I'm really enjoying it, to be fair. I'm going to kick us off. I'm going to talk about Never Fully Dressed, which is a brand that we've had. We've spoken about lots. We love all of their designs are amazing. We've had Lucy, who's the founder, she's been on the podcast before, but they have released a charity tee for Mental Health Awareness Day, which is, I think it's Sunday the 10th of October.
Yes, it is.
And it's a really beautiful t-shirt. £5 of it will go to Mind charity, so something that's really close to our heart. So definitely check it out. It just looks great with everything as well.
Yeah, it's really nice, and it's good to know that when you're buying it, you're supporting like a really good, great cause. So from t-shirts to soft play parties
seamlessly.
Yeah, exactly. In the summer, we had a little party for Gigi in the garden, and we actually used this company, Ramble Kids, and they are basically come with like all of the soft play stuff that you need, like a ball pond, like stuff for them to climb on, and it's all obviously really clean, it looks really nice, and they can sort of tailor it to how much space you've got. So we had it in the garden, so we managed to have quite a bit. But if, you know, it's winter now, maybe you're having a party inside, it's such a lovely thing. And you know what? Like, we didn't have to entertain them at all. Like, that was the entertainment. They just played, and you know they're safe. So I'd really recommend them. The team are really professional. They come and clean it, you know, all down, take it all away. Perfect for parties.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to talk about a new product that I've just started using. I've been using it for about 6 weeks now, from Nioxin. Nioxin is a brand that I have been using the shampoo and conditioner for a while, and their sort of anti-breakage range, because obviously after the kids and you know, the early menopause stuff, a lot of my hair fell out and broke. But they have just launched their 3D intensive deep protect density mask. So I've basically been using it as like a treatment. You can leave it on for like 3 to 5 minutes, but you can also do what I've been doing, which is leaving it on for like an hour. And I've just noticed that my hair just feels just a lot less dry, basically. That's my whole mission in life, is to sort the ends. The bottom half of my hair just feels so dry and so brittle. But I've had some really good results with it. So I might give it a try.
James has been using Nioxin for quite a few years.
You don't really need it, Rapunzel. Jesus.
You can always have more hair. And just to finish off, like, some small business love. Like, we do love supporting small businesses. And so I just wanted to mention two that I've been shopping from for ages. So one is Boutique Bonita, actually started by a friend of mine and her mum. They do lots of different hats that you can get personalised, like fans. So if your friend getting married, they do like a fan that says bride on it. They do little baskets for the kids. It's just the two of them. They're sold, they're stocked in Selfridges now and Harrods. It's actually incredible. Definitely check them out. And then also another one, Betsy and Floss, again started by somebody that I know. And they're like personalized little card holders, handbags. You might have seen me wear one of the bags, and they're like a decent price point. I think the card holders are like £20 maybe, something like that. Brilliant. So it's affordable and it makes a nice gift. Just wanted to finish up by supporting a couple of small businesses.
Product's done for this week. Before we go though, we just wanted to say massive thank you for leaving all of your lovely reviews. Just like Charlotte has, I'm going to read one out. An absolute must listen to any mum or mum-to-be. Love how no topic is off limits, and for both of your honesty around motherhood. Amazing advice by experts and great product tips too. I think you're both brilliant. That is so lovely.
That literally encapsulates everything we want to be. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, you can leave one as well. You can rate, review, as I said, subscribe and follow the podcast too. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and obviously the Q&A episodes are for you guys. So if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover, or any burning questions that we might be able to find an expert to answer, then please do drop us a DM. We're on @MadeByMummers, and we'll be back on Tuesday. Made by Mummers is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.